Chapter 12. The Madagascar Eco Pocket was beautiful, one of a dozen eco pockets in Anchor Point. According to the assistant director of Green Spaces, all were perfectly maintained versions of their respective originals. Spence had suggested it to Hicks because it was closest to both his and Newt's quarters. Hicks liked it simply because it was nothing like LV-426. Since they'd first visited Ripley, Hicks had brought Newt here almost every day. She loved to sit in the tall grass, enjoying the authentic but fake breezes that carried a hint of the fake ocean and feeling the fake sunshine on her face. He liked that himself. It felt good on the new skin coming in on his face and arm. Sometimes it got a little itchy, or a lot itchy, but that meant he was healing. Itchy was better than painful. He just had to remember not to scratch. Right now, he was doing his best not to scratch by watching Newt reach one hand out to a ring-tailed lemur. The pocket was home to a small colony of the little primates, which were the main attraction for Newt. The kid had listened attentively as the pocket's lead caretaker explained in a friendly but serious way that just because the lemurs had been bred in captivity and were accustomed to people, they weren't simply free-range pets. In captivity didn't mean domesticated. The lemurs didn't mind humans visiting, but this was their turf. Hicks had marveled at the way Newt had shown no signs of impatience or restlessness. Apparently, her off-the-chart survival instincts also worked in environments without monsters, although the kid was smart enough to know that not all monsters looked like aliens. Or as Ripley had put it, at least you don't see them fucking each other over for a share.
"Have you ever been to Africa, Hicks?" Newt asked softly.
The lemur stiffened at the sound of her voice.
"Yeah, I have," he replied just as softly, hoping he wouldn't startle the animal.
No such luck. He caught a glimpse of its ringed tail as it vanished into the grass.
"I was in the Atlas Mountains in Morocco for 4 weeks of high-altitude basic. Nothing like Madagascar."
Newt wrapped her arms around her folded legs and rested her cheek on her knees, looking at him wistfully.
"I'd like to go there."
"Shouldn't be a problem," he said, smiling. "You'll go to Gateway on a transport, a lot like the Sulaco. Once you get there, you catch the long-haul ship to Earth and the next thing you know, you're in Oregon with your grandma and grandpa. After that, it's simple. Jump over one big puddle, then another, a smaller one, and there you are, on the island of Madagascar."
Newt's brow furrowed as if she had the weight of the universe on her shoulders. Hicks wanted her to believe everything was all right, that she would never again face anything like what she'd gone through on LV-426. But belief could be tricky. He and the rest of the squad had believed they were going to LV-426 on a rescue mission. Instead, they'd screwed the pooch, then had to take off and nuke it from orbit because it was the only way to be sure. If only Ripley had been right about that.
"Oregon," Newt sighed. "I don't even remember it, or my grandparents."
Hicks chuckled.
"That's okay. They remember you."
She raised her head with a pointedly skeptical expression, and he knew better than to try bullshitting her. Besides, he owed her his life. She deserved the truth.
"Trust me, kid. Grandparents always remember their grandchildren," he said. "That's what they do. It's what they're for."
Her smile was fleeting.
"But what about Ripley? She'll wake up and I won't be there. Can't I wait?"
"Ripley's pretty smart," he grinned. "She'll find you. She always does, right?"
The kid nodded, looking no less troubled.
"Look, after the transport leaves for Gateway, there won't be another for months," he told her. "That's too long for you to wait. But hey, if you want to make double sure Ripley'll know where you are, leave her a note and tell her. I'll help you work out the precise coordinates if you want. Sound good to you?"
Newt hesitated for a couple of seconds, then smiled.
Affirmative, she said. You just better make sure she gets it, okay?
Affirmative, he said, feeling his heart break. From the doorway of Ripley's room, Hicks watched Newt sitting at a fold-down desk working hard on an elaborate star map. A water glass held felt-tip pens in a dozen different colors, and Hicks was pretty sure she had used all of them. Despite the circumstances, it was the closest she had ever come to childlike behavior. Maybe she'd have a chance at a real childhood, or something like it. Her grandparents were going to have their hands full with her. Hicks hoped they would know enough to keep her busy. He made a mental note to send them a copy of this star chart so they could see how meticulous she was, right down to the tiniest details.
Details are crucial, Corporal.
Oh, fuck off, he wished he'd said. Hicks would never regret helping Newt lie about not remembering what had happened on LV-426. He'd coached her on how cold sleep exacerbated traumatic memory loss to help her come across like the real deal. Maybe he should have felt bad. Protecting her was one thing, but showing her how to lie wasn't exactly ethical, even if it was the company. On the other hand, the company hadn't sent any trauma specialists along with their weaponized power couple. Neither of them had broached the possibility of neurological procedures to restore Newt's memory, and Hicks wanted to get her safely out of their reach before they did. The kid needed to go home to her family, not to a black ops lab. Newt printed her new address in the bottom right corner of the map in careful, very legible block letters, then showed it to Hicks. Newt Jordan, care of Mr. and Mrs. Richard Jordan, 34877 Greenleaf Avenue, number 582. New Portland, Oregon, AB994J2. He gave her a thumbs up, and she flashed him a brief grin before she went over to Ripley, pushing the monitors and consoles aside so she could get in close. For just a few moments, she just stood, leaning against the side rail and gazing at Ripley's pale, silent face with the row of electrodes on her forehead. Hicks could practically see the little wheels turning in Newt's mind. She was wavering about leaving again, wanting to stay until Ripley woke up, even if Ripley yelled at her for it. Hicks doubted Ripley would yell at her for anything, but she wouldn't have let the kid stay at Anchor Point either. In the absence of scheduled transport, Ripley would have put a pistol to somebody's head and commandeered any spacecraft available.
Ripley?
She waited a few moments, and Hicks knew she was hoping Ripley would finally hear her and wake up.
Ripley, it's me. Newt.
Still no reaction. Hicks felt his heart break again. When Ripley had helped him into his sleep capsule, he'd heard Newt call her Mommy. He hadn't assumed that automatically made him Daddy, but he would have thrown himself between the kid and anything that could hurt her, whether it was 100 screaming, acid-bleeding aliens or a couple of company goons. And not solely because it was his job. If that made him Newt's daddy, then he was everybody's daddy, at least sometimes.
I'm sorry, Ripley, but I gotta go now,
Newt said finally. Hicks could see how she was refusing to let herself cry.
I'm gonna go live with my grandma and grandpa in Oregon. Hicks says that's a good place.
She looked over at him and he nodded at her, hoping his smile looked encouraging.
But I'm leaving you a map of how to get to where I'll be, she went on. You can come and stay with me after you wake up, okay? I want you to. You have to. Please?
Newt's eyes welled up. She silently mouthed the words, "Bye, Mommy," before turning away and going quickly to Hicks. He was about to help her with the backpack, but she grabbed his hand and pulled him out of the room.
Crew only beyond this point, Newt said,
pointing to the sign over the entrance to the departure deck.
Only, I'm not crew, am I? Not really.
She looked up at Hicks with a solemnity so disquieting that he made a business out of helping her put on her backpack just so he could compose himself.
The Mona Lisa isn't primarily a passenger vessel, but it's fully licensed for them, Hicks said, keeping his voice light. One of the medics will be serving as your temporary guardian.
She started to say something and he cut her off.
Don't argue. All unaccompanied minors have to have one in transit. It's law. You'll have access to recreational areas, but only at certain times as determined by the skipper. Stick to those. And don't bite your guardian.
Newt looked up at him and he winked at her.
And everyone on the crew will be your friend, okay? Which is a very good thing. Anything else isn't so good.
I know what to do,
she said as he turned her around and lifted her chin with one finger.
You and Ripley trained me real good.
Her smile was sad.
But I'd really rather stick with my old crew.
Hicks chuckled.
Well, now you've got a new crew and a new mission, he said. Good luck in Oregon. Affirmative?
Affirmative.
Newt started down the long, narrow hallway to the departure deck, then stopped and looked back to give him a thumbs up. He gave her one in return and watched as she continued up the corridor, her bright red backpack bobbing with her movements. At the far end, she stopped again, waved, then disappeared around a corner before he could wave back. Hicks had planned to go straight to the gym to take his feelings out on a heavy bag. Instead, he ended up on the observation platform, watching Newt's transport depart. What the hell? A little more torture wouldn't kill him. For 30 seconds, the Mona Lisa moved slowly out of the docking bay until it was completely clear of the station. Then it zoomed off into the black. Phase one of torture complete. Now he could start missing her. If they hadn't found any surviving relatives, Hicks would have petitioned for his sister to get custody. Zelda would have loved the kid. But this was better. Newt had been through enough. Sending her to her family was the right thing to do. And it was the only way to be sure. Wasn't it?